It's Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. Do stay tuned for an hour of crime in your theater of the mind. Later on, we hear the ever-popular Whistler series from 1949, but right now it's Suspense, entering their 17th season out of 20 on CBS Radio. From June 22, 1958, John Daner, Marcia Hunt, and Hunter and Ben Wright star in the Michael Frost story, The Last Kilometer.
Suspense. And the producer of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, the master of mystery and adventure, William N. Robeson.
In these uncertain and changing times, it is reassuring to know that some things can be counted on, such as death, taxation, tomorrow's sunrise, and suspense. Which is a devious way of remarking that with this broadcast, radio's outstanding theater thrills begins its 17th year on the air. We are proud to be one of the oldest programs in radio, and we are most keenly aware that this anniversary would not have been attained without the loyal and continuing interest of you who are listening to these words. Thank you. Thank you very much. And now to our story. It concerns sports cars and one of the most grueling tests of driving skill in the world, the Rallye des Alpes, which is run every year across the mountains of France, Switzerland, and Italy. Listen. Listen then as Miss Marcia Hunt stars in The Last Kilometer.
And now, The Last Kilometer, starring Marcia Hunt. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
The party was nice. The champagne was lovely. Renee's family was sweet. But something was wrong. There was a mysterious, well, curiosity in the way people would look at me and then look away. Especially his younger sister, Marie. I began to wonder if my lipstick was on crooked or my slip was showing. Marie?
Oui, mademoiselle?
What's wrong with me? Do I look all right?
Ah, oh, but mademoiselle, you are beautiful.
No, I'm not, and that's not what I mean. It's just the way all of Renee's friends stare at me.
Well, perhaps it's the resemblance.
What resemblance?
But of course, it's only imagination. You are Suzanne, the American girl my brother is going to marry.
Marie, do you think I can make him happy?
I hope so, Suzanne.
It frightens me a little. After all, I will be his second wife. And...
And yes?
Tell me about her.
About Claudette?
Yes. Did she make him happy?
Oh, yes, Suzanne. Always they were laughing, even then when they would lose.
Lose?
The races and the rallies. She was his, comment dit-on, his navigateur in the rallies.
Was she a good navigator?
Oh, Marie. They almost always won. Until she died 4 years ago. He has not entered a rally since then.
Until now?
Now?
The Rallye des Alpes. He's taking me as his navigator.
Oh, no.
Why, no. I can read a map.
But Suzanne, have you ever ridden in a rally?
Well, no, but...
Then please don't go on this one.
Why not?
Suzanne, je t'en prie, don't ride with my father in this rally. It's perhaps a later one, but please, not the Rallye des Alpes.
But why not? I'm not afraid.
Not afraid of what, ma chérie?
Riding with you in the Rallye des Alpes.
And why should you be?
Oh, Marie's been trying to talk me out of it.
Oh? Little sisters should be seen and not heard. Come, darling. Let me take you on a tour of the chateau of my ancestors. Perhaps we can discover a ghost or two that will really scare you. What was Marie saying about the Rallye des Alpes?
Nothing, except she begged me not to go.
She begged you. And of what else did you speak?
I asked her about your first wife.
And what did my little sister say about Claudette?
Only that you were very much in love. How did she die, Renee?
In an accident. Eh bien, now, this is my room since I was a little boy.
What sort of an accident did Claudette die in, Renee?
Susan, I do not care to discuss it.
Do you still love her?
She is dead. I love you. Now, I shall show you the gardens.
I say, Renee.
Eh? Oh, Johnny.
This idiot of a Decray is trying to tell me that Madero won the Class D trophy at Sebring in 54.
Madero? Oh, no. Il s'est trompé. Madero wasn't even driving in Class D. Pardon, ma chérie, I must settle an argument. I shall be right back.
I wandered into the high-ceilinged room Rene had lived in since he was a child. And for some strange reason, I thought of a tiny apartment back in Fresno, California. An apartment that would have fitted into this room with space to spare. The apartment Jimmy North and I had almost taken before we quarreled and decided that we weren't in love after all. And I thought how everything works out for the best. If I hadn't broken with Jimmy, I would never have run away to France and met Renee and fallen in love, really and truly in love. Then I saw it. On a gilded Louis XV commode stood my picture. But I couldn't remember giving Renee a picture, and I couldn't remember having had this one taken. And then I knew. It wasn't me. It wasn't me at all. On the bottom was written, "À mon très chère Marie, Claudette." To my dearest husband, from Claudette. It was like looking into a mirror. The laughing face in the photograph was mine, almost exactly. My hands felt suddenly clammy and wet, and I wondered why Marie had warned me about the Rallye des Alpes, and I wondered what kind of an accident Claudette had died in.
In a moment, we continue with the second act of Suspense.
Another visit with Joe and Daphne Forsythe.
Joe.
Yeah. I'm up. Now forget breakfast. I'll shave at work.
Joe, it's not time to go to work.
Then why'd you wake me up?
You were snoring.
How about that?
You were snoring loud.
Oh, really?
I just wanted to quiet you.
I thought I was quiet.
You sounded like a buzzsaw going through a pine knot.
Pretty good. I wish I could be with you at 2:30 in the morning.
You can go back to sleep now.
Oh, gee, thanks.
You can get a good night's sleep, too. Our savings bonds will protect us.
Huh?
They protect us. The money we invest is used to protect our country and its freedoms. Why, all around us, we can see the safeguards that our bonds have paid for.
How about that?
So, you see, when you buy that savings bond with every paycheck, you're really investing in a secure night's sleep.
Not in this house, I'm not.
What?
Good night, Daphne.
Good night, Joe.
And now, starring Miss Marcia Hunt, Act Two of The Last Kilometer.
My dark forebodings soon vanished before Renee's gay smile, and I forgot Marie's warning in the excitement of preparing for the rally. At last, on a bright, clear morning, we were in the Parc Fermé in Marseille, from which, one by one, a minute apart, the cars roared off on one of Europe's most difficult tests of driving skill. As René pulled his Alfa Romeo up to the starting gate, I thought he was the most handsome man I had ever seen, his dark eyes flashing with excitement. But his mouth was a grim line, and somehow, behind the excitement, he had a haunted, secret look, which frightened me.
Ah, René Béranger, you honor us again. It has been 2-3 years.
4, mon vieux, 4. We try once more. Ah. I go now to get our number.
The starter began walking around our car, making the safety inspection the rules required. Suddenly, he stopped and stared at me.
Pardonnez-moi, mademoiselle, vous êtes américain?
Yes.
I thought for a moment you look like... Ah, it's no matter.
I look like his first wife?
Oui, mademoiselle, very much. Very, very much.
Our number, ma chérie, 107. It is the one I have asked for. You will place it in the windscreen, no?
A lucky number?
Lucky? Perhaps.
Prêt, Monsieur Béranger?
Oui, tout à fait prêt.
Bien. 10.
Faites attention, chérie, the count begins.
Oui. René, there's something I must know.
Tais-toi.
René, you must tell me. Did you ever take Claudette on this rally?
Silence. Yes.
René, answer my question.
Partez.
Allons-y.
Bonne chance.
Now there was no time to think, to wonder, to ask questions, or to enjoy the scenery. The day was the roar of the motor, the screech of tires, and the map of our route, from which I scarcely looked up as I checked off the villages we passed through, and the control points where officials would penalize us if we were late. The night was wind and cold and stay-awake pills and shortness of breath as we whined across the high Alps of Switzerland toward Italy. The second day was like the first, excepting the names on the maps were no longer French. And then in a little town on Lago di Garda, at last I slept for 3 beautiful hours, but only because René had to free a sticky valve. But too soon, we were on the road again. We'd lost time to make up.
Cortina, Susan. When must we be in Cortina?
Cortina, just a second.
Here, give it to me. There. You see, it's right there. We must make the Cortina control point at 3:06 in the morning. That seems simple to read, no?
Yes, René. Sorry.
We're almost the only car still unpenalized. Just like before.
Like when before?
Like 4 years ago. Each checkpoint, each control we hit, poof, on schedule.
Who is we, René?
We fall behind, and I tried to make it up. And never has the Grand Corniche been driven like I drove it. And we were on the last kilometre. Oh, mon Dieu. Et toi? Toi, idiot, fais attention là-bas!
What is it?
That Porsche ahead, he sees my lights. No, mon pauvre, no, not so fast! He does not know this road. Oh, no, 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 no. Stay here, Susan.
No, I'll go too.
Stay and stop the next car. Send him back for an ambulance.
I stayed and flagged down the next speeding car. And finally, an ambulance came. They struggled up the cliff with 2 sheeted forms on litters. And René climbed back into the car.
C'est le sport.
They were dead. They were dead, weren't they?
Yes, my chérie. They were dead.
Oh, how horrible.
It could be worse.
Worse?
That was Van Hoff and his wife. I knew them. They were much in love.
Then what could be worse?
If one of them died, and not the other.
Another day of twisting mountain roads, of hairpin curves, with no guardrails between the screaming, spinning car and 1,000 feet of emptiness. It was late evening when we roared back into France through the dank, dripping tunnel of the Col des Tendées and on down the tortuous descent of the Alpes Maritimes with the fresh, damp smell of the Mediterranean rising up to us. It was midnight when we ground to a stop at a gas station at La Tourbie on the Grand Corniche, high above Monte Carlo. Not much further now, just a few kilometers to the finish line at Nice.
Hey, service, tout de suite! Ah, where are these peasants? Hey!
Oui, monsieur. Qu'est-ce que vous voulez?
Petrol, tout de suite. You have coffee inside.
Ah, Monsieur Béranger, c'est vous?
Oui, c'est moi, and late like before.
Comme d'habitude, hein?
It is no matter. It is almost the last kilometre. Coffee, Susan?
No, thanks.
And I need a cup.
I looked at the man I was going to marry. He was smiling secretively. I thought of Jimmy North back home with his frank, open face, and I realized I didn't know this man at all. René... Wait, I want to talk to you.
I must have coffee. You would not want me to sleep at the wheel, not on the last kilometre. There is a curve there. It is called La Courbe de Mort. You would not want me to go to sleep there.
La Courbe de Mort? The curve of death. I shivered. Then I looked at the attendant. He was staring at me wide-eyed. What is wrong, monsieur?
Oh, je m'excuse, madame, but you look like...
I know. Like Madame Béranger. You knew her?
Oh, I saw her once. C'est incroyable. You're the same. But it must not happen again.
Happen? What?
Mademoiselle, you must go no further on this rallye. You must remain here.
But why? It's only a few kilometers to the finish.
Mademoiselle, écoutez. Listen. 4 years ago, this man, this René Béranger, he has to stop here for petrol. The Rally des Alpes in 1954, huh? He has his wife with him. She is you, like you were the same girl, the same. They are behind, the road is wet. I warn them, but they go over the side on La Corbe de Mort. He lives, but she is killed.
So that was the accident.
Oui, mademoiselle. For years, we do not see Monsieur Béranger. Then, 6 weeks ago, he comes back again to La Corbe de Mort. He parks on the road, and he looks down, and he laughs. He says he will be back, and this time he will die with his...
6 weeks ago? It was just 6 weeks ago I met René at the casino in Nice.
Don't you see? To him, you are his Claudette again.
No. No, it's too fantastic.
What is so fantastic, ma chérie?
He says Claudette was with you before, but she was killed on this road.
How much, old man?
Oh, mademoiselle, you must not go. I beg you.
How much? The petrol, combien?
2,900 francs.
Eh bien. Voilà. Keep the difference. Now, allons-y.
No, René.
What?
I'm not going any further.
Hey, what are you saying? To have come so far and missed the finish?
No, René. No, you know the route well. Now, you can drive the rest of the way yourself.
That is enough. Quite enough. You will ride with me to the end.
No, René. No. Please.
Stop that sniveling. Get down to business. How much further? How many kilometers from La Tourbie to Nice? What time must we cross the finish line?
The map was a blur. Then it came sharply into focus, and I saw something I hadn't noticed before. There was no time written on the map for the finish. And the red crayon stopped short of Nice. Stopped just 1 kilometer from La Tourbie. The last kilometer.
La Tourbie to Nice. How far? I ask how far?
It looks like 18 kilometers.
Merci. Merci, Claudette.
In a moment, we continue with the third act of Suspense.
We have, together, ample capacity in freedom to defend freedom. This is NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. NATO nations contribute to the further development of peaceful and friendly international relations by strengthening their free institutions, by bringing about a better understanding of the principles upon which these institutions are founded, and by promoting conditions of stability and well-being. The United States of America is a part of NATO. You should be aware of and alert to the objectives and programs of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization.
And now, starring Miss Marcia Hunt, Act 3 of The Last Kilometer.
Oh, René, please.
It is like before, no? The rain and the darkness. Oh, remember this curve here, this monster? Oh.
René, how can I remember? I wasn't here.
And there it is at last, Claudette. There is the grandfather of them all, La Coupe de Mort. Remember, ma chérie? Remember, Claudette?
René, I'm not Claudette. I'm Susan. René, Susan!
What? Susan? Susan! No! Susan, forgive me!
Man from the gas station found me, 100 yards from the car, wandering in a daze.
Mademoiselle, oh, grâce à Dieu, you are safe.
Where is he? Is he?
He lives, mademoiselle, but I think not long. You must not go there. Please.
He was lying among the rocks by the overturned car. He was bleeding from the mouth. His eyes were glazed, but when he saw me, he smiled.
Claudette.
I looked down at the man I had loved. Then I kneeled beside him. Oui,
René?
Bonjour, Claudette.
Bonjour, René. Et adieu.
Mademoiselle, there is nothing more you can do here. Permit me to take you back to the village.
Thank you. Is there a phone, a telephone there?
Oh, oui, mademoiselle. You wish to make a call?
Yes, yes, please. An overseas call. To Fresno, California.
Suspense, in which Marcia Hunt starred in William N. Robeson's production of The Last Kilometer by Michael Frost. In just a moment, the names of the supporting players and a word about next week's story of suspense.
If someone were to accuse you of being a firebug, you'd probably be pretty indignant. But the fact is, you may be a firebug unless you're unusually careful. For example, how often do you ride along the highway in your car and thoughtlessly toss a lighted cigarette butt out the window? Most of the time, it may not do any damage, but you're taking the chance because a gust of wind may carry that butt into a clump of dry grass and start a disastrous brush or forest fire. So from now on, please use the ashtray inside the car. Of course, when you're out in the woods for a walk or a picnic, be especially careful with fire. Break all matches in two before throwing them away. Make sure that ashes from all smokes, cigarettes, cigars, and pipes are all the way out before you leave them. The same goes for campfires, which should be drowned and stirred not once but twice. Don't run the risk of losing acres of forest land so valuable for timber, water, and soil conservation and for recreation areas. Be careful with fire.
Supporting Marcia Hunt in The Last Kilometer were Ann Hunter, John Daner, and Ben Wright. Listen. Listen again next week when we return with another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday from June 22, 1958 on CBS, their 17th season on the air, beginning with that episode directed by William N. Robeson. The program would be on CBS for 20 years, known as a showcase for celebrities acting in radio's outstanding theater of thrills. It's an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now the story, the telltale brand on the Whistler. Bill Foreman, our guide through this CBS broadcast from January 9, 1949.
The Signal Oil Program, The Whistler. That whistle is your signal for the Signal Oil Program, The Whistler.
And I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales, hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
Yes, friends, it's time for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler, rated tops in popularity for a longer period of time than any other West Coast program in radio history. And now The Whistler's strange story, Telltale Brand.
The small western community of Eagle's Nest, once a gold rush boom town, still full of interesting landmarks, silent reminders of a hectic, glorious past, had turned into a quiet, peaceful center of small-town trade and commerce. From the Gold Nugget Hotel at one end of its main street to the Silver Slipper Saloon at the other, a handful of men lolled in doorways, stood chatting quietly on street corners. A more careful observer, however, could discover activity, or at least some noise, and it was taking place in the front office of the town's newspaper in the middle of the block. Some of the leading citizens were there listening, and the noise was being made by a tall man named Mark Melville.
Your town is dying on the vine. Now, you men run this place. You, Mr. Betterly, with one of the finest ranches in the West. Henry Malone here with his department store. Chambers and his newspaper. Mr. Conklin, your boss.
Look, mister, we don't even know your name. You can't just walk in here.
Now, let me finish. And the name's Mark Melville. Let me tell you what happened to me. I have a good public relations business in San Francisco. 2 weeks ago, I suddenly got fed up, wanted a rest, a change. I closed up the office, stepped onto a bus, ended up here. No particular reason, just stepped off the bus. You know what happened to me when I walked down your main street? I didn't see a broken-down, has-been community, no sir. I saw a colorful saloon with swinging doors. I caught the excitement and gaiety that belongs with a place like this. I'd like to see it that way again, and one thing can do it. Publicity, gentlemen, publicity. Promotion.
Publicity, promotion?
Yes, put on a Frontier Week or an Old Timers Week. Anything we want to call it. Just something to bring people in from miles around. Now, there's 100,000 people within a radius of 75 miles. They'll come, believe me, they will. And they'll spend money, too. Why, if necessary, I'd like to fly back to San Francisco and get my own capital to start things rolling.
Oh, no. If we ever do go into a thing like this, we'll pay our own freight.
What sort of things would we do, Mark?
Why, the stunts are endless. We'd give it the works, western-wise. Put on a rodeo, a carnival. Have a stagecoach race ending up in the middle of town. We'll make a rule, maybe. Everybody wears a 10-gallon hat. We could even organize a vigilante committee. Anybody caught with his hat off gets his head dunked in the horse trough.
Wouldn't that be a terrific idea? I don't wear one. Hey, Melville, how much would you want for your services?
Oh, if you insist on a business basis, well, you can give me a percentage of the overall take, say 10-15%. Have it your way.
15% it is. Boys?
Yeah, that's right.
When can you get started?
Why, wait another minute. I'll go back to my hotel, start setting things up right now.
Just a minute, Mr. Melville. Where are you going?
Why, up to my room.
I wouldn't bother. It's locked. I got the key.
I'm not sure that I understand. I get it. I know just what you're thinking.
I wouldn't be surprised.
You're thinking when I stepped off that bus 4 days ago, I was booked.
Exactly.
I want you to do something, Mr. Davis. I want you to go to that telephone there. Pick it up. Call Chambers Paper. Mr. Betterly's there. I want you to ask for him.
Betterly? You know Jim Betterly?
I came here to see him. And not 5 minutes ago, he talked me into a deal worth at least several thousand dollars. Go on, call him. Get him on the phone. I insist, Mr. Davis. Tell Betterly what you think of Mark Melville. Tell him you don't want me in your hotel. See what he has to say about it. And about me. Well?
Here's your key, Mr. Melville. Mr. Melville, I'll bring your bag up right away. I locked it in my office.
When you bring it up, bring along a lunch menu. going to be doing some work in my room.
Yes, sir.
It's amusing, isn't it, Mark, how people can be impressed. You've often thought that, given the means, you could change a universe. Only right now, and for several thousand badly needed dollars, you must concentrate on changing Eagle's Nest, putting it on the map as you promised. The next day, you move your headquarters over to the newspaper office. It's while you're at the typewriter pounding out the first publicity release on the Eagle's Nest Frontier Week that you met someone else.
Hello.
Hello. Well? Hello?
I'm Helen Wright.
Helen? I'm Mark.
I know. Mark Melville, publicity genius. Going to tell the world about Eagle's Nest.
Isn't it about time somebody did?
Yeah. That is my typewriter you're using.
Oh, well, I'll be through in a minute.
Use it. As long as you like.
Thanks. You work here on the paper, huh?
Yeah. Thrilling career.
Bitter?
Bored.
Uh-huh. I know the feeling.
What do you do about it?
I generally start looking around for something new to take up my time.
Interesting idea.
It usually works. You like to discuss it sometime?
Maybe.
Live close by?
No. I live out, about 5 miles.
Doing anything tonight?
Wasn't planning to.
Why don't you meet me here in town?
I'm engaged to Jim Betterly.
Oh. Well, I guess that changes things.
Yeah. I better meet you out of town.
So now you have two things to amuse you, Mark. The Frontier Week plans and Helen. Soon you're seeing Helen every night late, always meeting her out of town so nobody will see the two of you together. But a week or so later, you begin to notice two things which disturb you. First, Helen is getting more serious. And second, her fiancé, Jim Betterly, is staring at you very curiously these days. And then, just before the Frontier Week opens, it all comes to a head. After the final committee meeting, Jim Betterly waits while the other members leave, and then he comes up to you.
Melville.
Hmm? Oh, Betterly.
I want to talk to you.
Yeah? I suppose you want to be sure you've got the plan straight.
I got them straight, but that isn't what I want to talk about, Melville.
No?
No. I want to talk about Helen.
Helen?
Yeah, she's engaged to me. That means I'm in love with her and I want to marry her pretty soon.
Why, sure. I hope you do, but...
Melville, all this stuff you've done for the town so far shows you got a lot of brains. You're a pretty clever fella. Just don't get too clever.
Look, I don't know what this is all about, Betterly, but believe me, you've got nothing to worry about as far as Helen's concerned.
I'm glad you said that, Melville. Just don't forget it.
Jim Betterly walks out the door, and you sit there at your typewriter thinking. It doesn't take you long to make up your mind, does it, Mark? One look at Betterly's face a few minutes ago has told you what would happen if he ever found out about you and Helen. You're still sitting there at your typewriter, thinking about it when she walks into the newspaper office and comes over to you. And then suddenly she bends over you.
Hello, darling, darling, darling.
Helen, not here.
Why not?
Betterly just left. He might have seen you.
Let him.
What?
I said let him see me. I'm tired of sneaking around, meeting you out of town late at night.
I thought that was the way you wanted things.
I did at first. I thought I wanted to hang on to Jim then. But now I know I don't. Now I only want you, Mark.
Well, as a matter of fact, Helen, I want to talk to you about us.
Yeah, I've been hoping you would, darling.
I don't think you understand.
Mark, you'll be leaving town after Frontier Week. Take me with you. I'm sick of this stupid little town. Take me to San Francisco, Mark. We can get married there.
San Francisco?
Yeah, that's where we belong. Together.
I'm afraid not, Helen.
What do you mean?
Look, we've had a lot of fun together. But, well, things seem to have gotten a little beyond the fun stage. So I think it would be best for all concerned if we just call it a day.
Call it a day? Now, let me get this real clear.
Now, look, let's not...
You want to brush me off?
Helen!
Well, there's something you ought to know, Mark. I don't brush. When there's something I want, I hang on to it. And if you think otherwise, you're in for a lot of trouble.
Trouble? Look, Helen, I don't like threats.
This isn't a threat, darling. It's a fact. Jim Betterly's got quite a temper.
Ha! You're bluffing. He's the last guy in the world you'd tell.
Is he? Well, I think I could explain things to him in a way that might
look,
be very...
Look, if you go to Betterly with a bunch of lies about us, Helen, I'll tell him the truth.
Will you? And who do you think you'll believe? Me or you?
I see.
Yeah, so do I. And I know just what you're thinking, that you could leave town right now and be in the clear. Well, it wouldn't work. Because once I told Betterly about us, he'd follow you and he'd find you no matter where you went. So think it over, Mark. Better play it my way. It'd be much safer. Much.
With the prologue of Telltale Brand, the Signal Oil Company brings you another strange story by The Whistler.
It had been so simple at the start, hadn't it, Mark? So easy selling the citizens of Eagle Nest on the idea of a Frontier Week celebration. And you looked forward to the day when it would all be over, and you could ride out of Eagle Nest with $3,000 or $4,000 in your pocket for masterminding the affair. Yes, it was a perfect setup. Until you became involved with Helen, Jim Betterly's fiancée. Now there's no telling how much trouble she'll make if she goes to Betterly with her version of what's happened. And yet you can't leave town. Not before you've collected the money that will be waiting for you at the end of the celebration. You think about it in the days that follow and struggle to reach a decision. Then Frontier Week opens, and you plunge into the 1,001 details of running the affair. You manage to avoid Helen as much as possible. And then on the night of the carnival, as you wander around the grounds, you notice Helen at a distance. She's with a stranger. A man you've never seen before. And then as you watch them...
Melville.
What?
Oh, Betterly.
Hi.
How's it going?
How's what going?
Why, the carnival.
Pretty good. I want to talk to you a minute, Melville.
Well,
this won't take long. I want to get it off my chest.
Why, how come you're not making the rounds of the sideshows tonight, Betterly?
Because I've been looking for you.
Say, I see you've got a friend to show Helen around.
A friend?
Yeah, I saw her with someone a few minutes ago.
He's no friend. I've never seen him before.
Oh?
Look, Melville.
Hey, grab the tourist, boys. He hasn't got a hat on. Come on.
Here, vigilantes are doing quite a job, Betterly. That horse trough's gotten a lot of business.
Yeah. Melville, quit changing the subject. What I got to say isn't easy, and I want to get it over with.
All right. What is it?
Last week, you and I had a little talk. Remember?
Yes, but I told you then, Betterly.
I thought you and Helen had been seeing each other.
Look, Betterly.
The last couple of days, I've hardly seen her, and now, tonight, she's with a stranger.
You say you haven't seen her much lately?
No. And, well, maybe I was wrong about you, Melville. Just wanted to tell you I'm sorry for shooting my mouth off the other day.
Why, that's okay, Betterly. Sure, forget it.
It's difficult to hide your surprise and relief, isn't it, Mark? And now it looks like Helen has found a new interest, the stranger. Yes. Suddenly it seems that all your troubles are over, doesn't it? It's almost 2 a.m. when you go back to your hotel room. But then as soon as you close the door, you see it, the note on your pillow. And as you read it, you realize your troubles aren't over after all.
Mark, I must see you tonight. It doesn't matter how late. I'll be expecting you. You'd better not disappoint me, Helen.
Well, it looks like this is the showdown, doesn't it, Mark? 10 minutes later, you arrive at her house. The shades are drawn, but there's a light inside. You open the door and go in. Your eyes flick past the empty bottle on the table to Helen's sullen face. She pokes silently at the coals in the fireplace with a poker and then straightens up and turns to you.
Decided to quit trying to hide from me, huh?
Look, I haven't been trying to hide. I just wanted to get things straightened out in my mind. Anyway, I'm sure your new boyfriend has kept you from getting too lonely.
Boyfriend? What are you talking about?
The guy you were with at the carnival.
Ah, don't make me laugh. He was just in town for the celebration. I never saw him before tonight.
You always have made friends easily, haven't you?
Still, you pay for that crack. I gave you a few things to think about the other day, didn't I?
Yeah. I've been thinking about them. I've reached a decision.
What is it?
Come into Frontier Week, I'm leaving town. Alone.
I don't think you will.
I don't think he'll do anything about
it. Jim will kill you when I tell him.
Look, A, I don't think you have enough nerve to tell him. B, even if you do, I don't think he'll believe you now, so just forget it.
Forget it? You're going to take me with you, understand? You're going to take me with...
Take you with me to San Francisco? You must be out of your mind.
You think you're too good for me, don't you? You think I'm just a small-town hick? Well, this is what I think of you.
You shouldn't have done that, Helen. You've had something coming for a long time, and I'm going to
You
give
stay
it...
away from me, Mark.
Put that poker down.
It's red hot, Mark.
Burn me. Burn my chest with your little...
Moments later, you're standing there in a daze, Mark, staring at Helen's lifeless body on the floor, then at the angry X-shaped burn on your chest. Finally, your mind begins to clear. You look around the room. There's no sign you've been there. And luckily, you're almost certain nobody saw you leave your hotel. You slip out the front door and look around. There's no one in sight. So you hurry back to your hotel room, rip off your charred shirt, and hide it temporarily in your closet. Then you collapse on your bed. The burn on your chest is throbbing painfully now, but you have no bandages or salve to put on it. So you just lie there, staring into the darkness. And then finally, just before dawn, your eyes close from sheer fatigue.
Yes, Sheriff.
Can you come on over to my office right away?
Why, yes, of course. Is anything wrong?
Yeah, something's wrong.
And you know what he means, don't you, Mark? Helen's murder. Probably this is just routine, but you've got to be on guard. You put on a clean shirt and wince as the cloth brushes against the burn. 10 minutes later, you walk into the sheriff's office. With him are a circle of grim-faced men. Among them, Chambers, Conklin, and Jim Betterly. The sheriff doesn't lose any time questioning you.
Where were you last night, Melville?
Last night? Why? At the carnival?
What time did you leave?
Oh, it must have been almost 2. Everything was closing up. Why, Jeff?
Where'd you go after you left the carnival?
To my hotel room.
You leave your room at all after that?
No. Look, would you mind telling me what this is all about?
Sometime between 2 and 3 this morning, Helen Wright was murdered.
Murdered? Oh, no.
Yeah, and I think you might have had something to do with it, Melville.
Sheriff, I'm getting sick and tired of this guy throwing nasty accusations at me. 2 weeks ago, he got the crazy idea I was seeing Helen secretly. He even threatened me about it. But you admitted to me yourself, Betterly, that you were wrong just last night.
Yeah, that was before I talked to Joe Merrill.
Joe Merrill? Who's he?
He drives a truck between here and Little Creek every night. He says he's seen Helen riding on the highway more than once lately, and the man she was with looked like you.
Like me? Why, that's...
No, no, Betterly, Joe didn't make a positive identification. He said it was too dark.
Sheriff, this whole thing is ridiculous. Anyone that says I was ever with Helen is lying.
If I just had one little shred of proof, Melville, just one little shred...
But you don't, Betterly. There's no case against Melville, and you know it. Oh, there's no use arguing among ourselves. If we could just locate that stranger and pick him up, I got a strong hunch he's our boy.
Stranger? You mean the man Helen was with at the carnival last night?
Yeah.
You think he might have been the one who killed her?
Beginning to look that way.
Yeah, Melville dropped out of sight during the night, apparently left town. No trace at all of him.
I think maybe if we could only catch up to him, we'd find the brand Helen slapped on him.
The brand?
Yeah. We found a poker and some charred bits of cloth on the floor beside her body. Looks like she branded her killer.
Oh, I see.
Look, Sheriff, I don't care what Melville says. I still think he's lying.
Now, listen, Betterly.
I think he was sneaking around trying to see Helen behind her back. Maybe that's how it was. Maybe she refused to see him, so he killed her. If I could just prove you'd been seeing her, Melville.
Betterly, I'm afraid that wouldn't prove much.
What do you mean, Ed?
Well, I'm no particular friend of Melville's here, but all I say is if he was seeing Helen on the sly, he wasn't the first one or the only one.
What are you trying to say, Ed?
Oh, I'm sorry, Betterly, but, well, Helen and I, we were kind of running around together for a while, too.
That's a lie!
No, I'm afraid it isn't, Betterly.
You keep out of this, Conklin.
Oh, Helen and I had a few dates, too.
Helen and you? And Ed?
Yeah. I don't like to say this. Well, I guess it was the same with Ed as me. Just as much Helen's idea as was ours. That's why I think probably it was this stranger that killed her. Helen had sort of a...
Well, I guess that's enough for now. I'm sorry, Betterly. Melville, I don't think I'll need you anymore. You can go now.
The Whistler will return in just a moment with a strange ending to tonight's story.
It was a stroke of luck you hadn't counted on, wasn't it, Mark? Just when things looked darkest for you, the unexpected character witness, Ed Chambers and Bud Conklin, took the pressure off you, didn't they? The surprising light they threw on Helen's activities makes the missing stranger a very promising suspect in her murder. So now you're as good as in the clear. And it's a very pleasant feeling, isn't it? Even the burn under your shirt, the killer's brand, doesn't seem to hurt as much anymore. You follow the men out of the sheriff's office. Betterly stands at the horse trough, staring emptily down at the water. And you go over to him.
Betterly, I'm sorry about what happened, Betterly.
Leave me alone now.
Okay, Betterly.
Hey, what's that bunch of men heading this way for?
Huh? Oh, that's the Frontier Week Vigilante Committee.
Vigilante Committee? Well, haven't they heard about what's happened?
I don't know, guess not.
We better call the rest of this Frontier Week off, Melville.
Yeah, guess you're right.
Well, hey, look! Look, if it ain't the big boss himself! Looks like the joke's on you, Melville. Come on, take your medicine.
Hey, what is this? Let go of me.
Ah, this is Frontier Week, remember? And you don't have your hat on, so you get your head ducked.
Yeah.
What? Just a minute, I'll get my head. It's right inside, Mr. Sheriff.
Oh, listen to him.
Now, come on, get your shirt off. I got to duck you.
Yeah. My shirt? Yeah. Oh, no. Get your hands off.
Hey, what's the matter? Can't you take it when the joke's on you?
I said, get your hands off.
Okay, boys, get his shirt off.
Let go of me. Let go.
Okay, we'll take his shirt off the hard way. Here goes.
The brand. That burn on his chest.
Ed,
You better call the sheriff.
Let that whistle be your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler, each Sunday night at this same time. Brought to you by the Signal Oil Company, marketers of Signal gasoline and motor oil and fine quality automotive accessories. Signal has asked me to remind you, to get the most driving pleasure, drive at sensible speeds, be courteous, and obey traffic regulations. It may save a life, possibly your own. Featured in tonight's story were Rye Billsbury, Mercedes McCambridge, and William Conrad. The Whistler was produced by George W. Allen and directed by Gordon T. Hughes, with story by Bob Reif and music by Wilbur Hatch, and was transmitted to our troops overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. All characters portrayed on the Whistler program are fictional. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Remember, at the same time next Sunday, another strange tale by The Whistler. Marvin Miller speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Whistler, on Tuned to Yesterday from January 9th, 1949 on CBS. Bringing to an end this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from the golden age of radio. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.